12 Years a Slave was the first film written and directed by a black director, and whose screenplay was adapted by a black writer to win an Oscar for Best Picture. In all, Steve McQueen's gripping chronicle of a free black man kidnapped and forced into slavery won more than 200 awards. It's based on the true story of Solomon Northup and the memoir that he wrote about his experience in 1853. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. In January, I spoke with Dr. Dolan Perkins Valdez, who has written an introduction for a new edition of Solomon Northup's book. She's also the author of a work of fiction about slavery. Wench was on the New York Times bestseller list in 2010. Dr. Dolan Perkins Valdez joined me on the line from Washington, D.C. So tell us about Solomon Northup's book, 12 Years a Slave. When it was published in 1853, was it widely read? Was it a hit?
It was. It actually came at a really interesting moment because Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin had been published the year before, and she had been talking about Solomon's story prior to the release of the book, which helped with the publicity. And as you know, Frederick Douglass's narrative had been released in 1845, and the Fugitive Slave Act had been passed in 1850. So this was a really critical time in the national discussion about slavery. When the book came out, it was an instant bestseller. It sold 30,000 copies within the first 3 years. But after that rapid success, the book sort of went out of popularity, unlike the narrative of Douglass, which continued to remain popular as he continued to be a prominent national figure. But there were about 2 or 3 years there where Northup enjoyed some fame and traveled on the lecture circuit with other abolitionists.
For folks who haven't seen the movie, could you give us a quick recap of Solomon Northup's experience?
Solomon was born a free man in upstate New York. His father had been enslaved to this Rhode Island family, but had gained his freedom. And so Solomon was born there and ended up marrying a woman, Ann Hampton, with whom he had 3 children. He was a carpenter and a fiddle player, and that's how he earned a living. A couple of men approached him about traveling to a gig in Washington, D.C., and he accepted. When he went to D.C., apparently, he was drugged and sold into slavery. He was owned by several different men for about 12 years until finally a Canadian who was visiting the plantation in Louisiana on which he was working agreed to take some letters Northup had written to his friends and family in the North. And upon receipt of those letters, they were able to gain his freedom. When he returned to his family in New York, he was very, very focused on getting this book done and getting this story out really for the remainder of his life.
Did the movie stay pretty true to Northup's memoir, the book?
I felt it did. As I watched the film, I felt it stuck pretty closely. Of course, since the film came out, I've heard various disagreements with that. You know, of course, adaptations are a difficult genre in general, but various people felt that there were key critical scenes missing from the film that were in the book, or vice versa. They felt that some of the creative license that McQueen took was not justified. But in my estimation, I believe it was as faithful as it could be.
Was this book published, do you think, for a white audience, for a mix of white and free black audience? Who do you think his target was at the time?
I mean, I think the target of these books were very polemical. They were political documents. And that's why early on they were labeled as anti-slavery propaganda and untrue. But there's no question that these stories that were published not only as books, they were published as pamphlets, etc. They were intended to further the cause of abolitionism. And so anyone who was involved in that cause would have been reading these. I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable that Northup's story sold 30,000 copies. It was also published in England, for example. So he did a very good job getting this story out there. And most of those audiences on the lecture circuit on which Frederick Douglass and Northup traveled were white abolitionists. And so I think that the intended audience would have been the people who had the power to end slavery. And I think they were pretty unequivocal about that intention.
On 88.1 WYPR, I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning is Dr. Dolan Perkins-Valdez. She's written the introduction to a new edition of Solomon Northup's classic book, 12 Years a Slave. You're listening to Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. His prose style is typical of the style of the day. It's quite florid, quite, I guess we would call it kind of stilted by modern standards. Was this typical of some of these other narratives that you mentioned and typical of just literature in general at that time? And do you think that it gained him credibility to write in this style? Did it make people believe him more when he wrote this way?
I really like the language of Northup's narrative. One of the things we have to remember is that he was assisted by a lawyer by the name of David Wilson, who was also, incidentally, an aspiring poet. And I'm sure that Wilson took liberties with the language, and some argue perhaps even a little bit with the story. So I think what historians have really agreed upon is that Wilson does capture the voice of Northup, and they have also verified that many of these details were true and did happen through the record. But yes, the style of narratives at that time tended to be very romantic and sentimental, and that was the vein in which Wilson and Northup collaborated. And many of them, if you read them, have similar conventions of sentimentality. But my sense is that Northup, because we know that Northup had received an above-average education in New York, I believe that Wilson was trying to capture some of Northup's erudition and voice and language. And although, yes, I'm sure Wilson took some liberties, I do believe that a lot of this narrative is Northup's own voice.
In your introduction, you write that Northup allows for areas of gray in his complicated portrait of white Southerners. Does he sort of leaven the horrific acts of these slave owners with stories of sympathetic slave owners? And if so, why do you think he was doing that?
Well, you know, interestingly, some of the critics who believe that the film wasn't faithful to the book say that some of the more sympathetic accounts of white slave owners were not included in the film, and that the film instead focused on the brutality and the viciousness, much to the exclusion of some of the calmer moments. But I do think that in order to be effective and in order to reach his audience, Northup had to really strike a balance in the tone. And I think not just Northup, any of the slave narratives that you see tend to also include portraits of what they call kind and benevolent slave owners whom they'd encountered. So I think that, you know, yes, this is part of the genre. This is part of, you know, how they felt that they could reach people's hearts. But having said that, I think Northup does it a little bit better than the rest. He's very realistic. He counters any sort of complimentary comment about a slave owner by saying, but let me tell you this, even in the best of circumstances, I've never met an enslaved man or woman who did not yearn for freedom. So he's very, very clear in saying that this is not to say that there were ever times when people actually enjoyed being enslaved.
Sure. There's been quite a difference in the reaction and response to the movie from white people and black people. Have you found that to be the case?
I have. You know, these movies, in a way, for example, that Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained did not do, but a movie such as this one, which takes the subject very seriously, tends to engender old psychological wounds in our country. And I think that it provokes a conversation that is actually necessary and beneficial, no matter what the reaction. And I have noticed that, you know, many African Americans have reacted very emotionally on both sides of the coin. Some say, you know, this is a necessary movie, this is a beautiful movie, this is an important movie. And others say, oh, no, not another slavery movie. And And I think both responses are valid and necessary to the healing of our national psyche. But one of the things that a movie like this does do is it brings up those old wounds that still need to be healed. And it's the reason why the movie has to be made, because those conversations, I think, need to continue and need to be resolved.
Sure. And I mean, with this book and this movie, how do you think that they are going to help inform our conversation about things like reparations or affirmative action or just, you know, general issues of equality in today's culture?
I think, you know, just having the conversation is the start. If these kinds of films aren't made, we're not even having the conversation. And, you know, even though we've had, you know, Steven Spielberg's Amistad and, like I said, Tarantino's Django Unchained, we've had these sort of Hollywood representations, the serious films still don't get made very often. And so I think having the conversation is the first step. And then from there, figuring out what do we need to acknowledge from one another's pain. Because remember, not only do we have the pain of the African-American heritage of being, you know, the descendants of slaves, but also there are many white families that are grappling with the discovery that their ancestors did, in fact, own slaves. Now, we know only 25% of white men own slaves, but still there are many Americans who can claim ancestry on that side, and it is a painful grappling for them. And so I think a movie like this is even something that can provoke conversations in white families about their own legacies.
Dr. Dolan Perkins-Valdez has written an introduction for a new edition of Solomon Northup's memoir about his experience being kidnapped and forced into slavery. 12 Years a Slave is published by Atria Books, an imprint of Simon & Schuster. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cass. Lots more after a break. Stay with us.